Welcome to the Frugalpreneur Podcast for people who want big venture for little capital. I'm your hostess, Shannon. And on today's episode, we'll be interviewing Ryan Bales, founder and CEO of Budgetable.com. Now, I actually met Ryan about a year ago at the Financial Bloggers Conference in Chicago. I asked him to be on the podcast today because I know he has some great insight on what it's like to start your own business and blaze your own trail. Budgetable.com is actually some interesting software that is attempting to help people simplify their budget and identify wasteful spending. So I think it's a pretty cool concept. So you can imagine doing something that's a bit different than normal budgeting software probably had its share of challenges, and I think his insights will be really helpful to you. And I know you'll enjoy the interview as much as I did. So let's get to it. Today we have Ryan Bales of Budgetable.com on the phone. So hi, Ryan.
Hello.
Thanks for being on the call for the Frugalpreneur podcast with us. You are the co-founder of Budgetable. And so as we get started, could you tell us a bit about yourself and your background and what led you to start Budgetable.com?
Sure. So I started my career in software development. I've been doing that for about 10 years now. I basically just UI stuff, user interface and stuff like that. Been working with for startups for several years, and an opportunity presented itself to kind of go out on my own. I'd been looking for a product to create, you know, some kind of problem that I needed to solve or that needed to be solved, and I started looking at budgeting. And, you know, some of the kind of traditional downfalls with it, you know, and you know, why don't people stick with budgets and what's so difficult about it? And I started looking for software out there to, you know, to see if anyone had addressed the problem. And I really couldn't find much. So I thought, well, I can do this, you know, and that's kind of where it started. For the past year or so, that's really what I've been doing, is just looking, just creating Budgetable and trying to solve the problem with budgets in a way that nobody's really done it before. And I think what we've came up with is really awesome. So, we're pretty excited about it. It's, something that we've really thought about, just to kind of tell you what Budgetable is. It's, like I said, I'd been asking myself, you know, what's wrong with budgeting? Why don't people stick with it? And, you know, it's kind of like going to the gym. I've said this over and over, but it's something you might stick with for a couple months and eventually fall off of. So with Budgetable, what I really wanted to do was I wanted to create something to where I could manage my budget kind of, you know, without having to set these monthly goals and without having to update it every day with my transactions. I just kind of wanted to work transparently in the background, you know. So what we've developed is an application that will automatically create your budget. And it looks for certain things like wasteful spending. It looks for certain patterns in your spending. And it's something that you don't have to set up at all. And it just kind of works with your life. You go there every day and you check it out. And we've created what we've called budget score. And the budget score goes up and down, you know, depending on your spending. Does that kind of answer your question?
It does. It does. That's really awesome. And so you said you kind of have like a computer software background.
Yeah.
And I can imagine that starting a new project like this, like, yes, it is a site. It does require some technical knowledge, but I'm sure there's a lot of business stuff that you had to acclimate yourself to, especially when you're running a project yourself. You're not just creating a platform for an employer, but you're actually doing this. So when you started Budgetable, did you find that there were some unanticipated challenges with really, you know, working for yourself and getting this off the ground that maybe didn't so much deal with your background, but unanticipated challenges with planning, working with others, networking, marketing, other like businessy stuff that you hadn't anticipated?
Yeah, there's a lot of things, to say the least. When I first started thinking about starting a software company, for probably 2 years prior, I was kind of, you know, trying to learn as much as I could from my employers, you know, and try to understand, you know, how they were doing the business aspect of it, because I knew how I knew how to do, you know, a lot of the development. So I kind of sat silently in the background and you know, just try to learn from them as much as I can, you know, drop questions here and there, without making it, you know, obvious that I was about to quit and start my own thing. But yeah, as far as unanticipated challenges that came up, I think a big part of it is networking, especially for someone like me who has a technical background. You know, you kind of put your attention to where your strengths are, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it when I first started out, I put most of my attention towards the actual software, you know, the actual technical aspect of it. And the business aspect and the marketing aspect was something that I wanted to get right, but I didn't quite understand the importance of it. You know, I didn't understand, you know, I was kind of under the impression that, you know, I'm just going to create this great piece of software and I'll launch it and everybody will love it. And I won't have to do any marketing because it'll be so great. And a lot of people, you know, from what I've talked to a lot of other founders and stuff, and they've made, you know, a lot of people have made these same mistakes. And there's always challenges with working with other people. And, especially for, you know, like I said, someone with a technical background, I've always been okay with people, so that it's not really that's not really the issue, but it's the issue of, you know, having a balance between trying to make people, you know, make people happy and get the job done as well. It takes some time to get that right.
Oh, and, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how do you feel that you overcame that? Like, so many of us don't go to school for business, and even if we did, there isn't like a crash course in, you know, starting your own gig. Was there anything you did to kind of field the buffer a little bit, to learn as you go? Did you read any books? Were there any websites you found particularly helpful?
Yeah, I've read a lot of books, a lot over the past, year or so. A big one that changed the way I do business is the Lean Startup. I don't know if you've ever read that or not, but it kind of changed my whole world, really. And they kind of take an approach of, you know, just getting something out there and then, you know, fixing it once people tell you what they really want. It makes a lot of sense. A lot of leadership books. I'm just trying to think of some of the ones that really, Guy Kawasaki has a lot of great books.
Oh yeah, he does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you read some of his books?
Yeah. Enchantment is a really good book. One of the first ones I ever read before I really, really got involved, with launching my blog full time. Mm-hmm. And that was definitely, it's like, you know that, and the whole crux for the listeners out there that haven't read Enchantment is basically kind of, as the title would say, is that you just want to enchant people, like really woo them to your business and really put a person behind the business. And I think we all think we know that and we take it for granted as an entrepreneur, like, oh yeah, sure, you know, they need to know me. But I find that when we start our own business, whether it's a blog or it's a platform or it's actually getting a product produced, that you kind of really don't know how to be yourself, and you really don't know how much person to put into what you're doing and like how honest you should be, or if you should take the we voice versus the, you know, I voice. If it's just one person, you sometimes feel that need to like really take a corporate, you know, we kind of tone. But I know you guys have been really good with Budgetable about putting a human face and really, really networking with people. Like you guys were at the Financial Bloggers Conference. What was that like?
It was great. I think it was a good experience. We met a lot of really cool people there and kind of got some insight into the niche that we're working with, and it really did help. You know, like you're just saying, it really did help kind of round or shape the identity of the company. You know, you made a good point. You know, do you want to kind of go with the we corporate sound or just put a, you know, one face behind it? And it is one of those things you have to kind of figure out, because sometimes when you go with, you know, the kind of a we type thing, it might sound a little more authoritative, you know, authoritative. But on the other hand, you know, I think that especially nowadays with all the new startups and everything, I think people want to see a face behind it, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, look at Apple and Steve Jobs, just to give you like a huge... it's like people really like to see this, you know, this leader behind the company. And I think it really helps with you know, creating a personal connection between your customer and your company is to have a face behind it. I definitely think that most people should do that. And there's some things to consider when you're thinking about doing that. You know, if you're a sole founder, or if you're, you know, even if you're working with a co-founder and you want to put your face behind that company, you got to keep your reputation. You have to behave. You know, you are no longer just representing you. You're representing your company. So, you know, Google yourself and make sure there's nothing nasty. You know, and it's all right, because it'll help, you know, build your reputation having your name behind a company. But it's just something that, you know, you're really kind of creating a marriage between your company and yourself. You know, you're always going to be tied to this company. People will Google you, you know. Mm-hmm. They will do their research and so it's just one thing to consider, but I definitely think it's a good idea to have a person, you know, someone behind a company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It's something that I think it's like new water for everyone to have to tread, because social media really wasn't around. Like, people starting their own business didn't have to worry about the face. Like, you would think about the face of your business as you would put it in a pamphlet or a newspaper interview. You could have one person representing your brand, and they were hired for that. And now it's like, I don't know if you heard about the whole Susie Orman debacle that happened a few weeks ago. And the whole personal finance blogging community rallied. And for those who don't know about it, Susie Orman, I guess, created this like debit card or something with fees attached to it. And, you know, that's one thing. But the personal finance community started, you know, a backlash of saying, you know, this is really bad, especially for people who are in debt. You shouldn't have a card that you say established credit, but it doesn't. And then there are fees attached to it. And whoever's handling her social media account started literally calling people out and saying, oh, you're stupid, you're an idiot, you know, personal finance bloggers shouldn't be taken seriously. And it's like, I don't know if Susie Orman actually runs her own social media. I think she does somewhat tweet for herself. Mm-hmm. But it's like, had it been anyone else other than Susie Orman, I think people would kind of think it's funny. But it's one of those brand management things you don't anticipate, that how honest can you really be? And can you really show emotion and anger or interject your own personality when you think people are dumb? Like, what obligation do you have to take on the omnipotent corporate face when you're tweeting with people?
Right.
So that's something interesting that I think a lot of entrepreneurs are treading with right now is what, you know, how personal is personal, and how to really make sure your past doesn't creep up on you.
especially if, you know, you're – if you're at, you know, like you said, you don't know if she manages her own social media, but you have to be really careful with who you have doing that, you know, just to make sure, you know, you're on the right track. Basically, you know, it's one thing to tweet for yourself. You can kind of manage your own identity, but when you have someone, you know, managing your brand online and tweeting, and you have to be really careful with that and really make sure that you have someone doing that you can trust. And if you can't find someone, just do it yourself. It's fun.
Right. Well, and the good thing about being an entrepreneur, especially when you're starting small, is if you make a mistake, that's like, I mean, everyone wants to be really big. Like, I know you were talking about how, you know, if I just create this awesome site, everyone will come to it and I don't have to do any marketing. Right. Well, everyone who's actually started their own project or their own business knows that first couple months to a year, it's almost like sometimes you tweet something and like you get crickets back. And it's really like, it's a horrible feeling when you really think that your product is awesome and people are going to come. But if you mess up, that's a bonus. Like if you say something really dumb and you don't know any better, you can just delete it and nobody, it's like flown under the radar.
Yeah, exactly. that is an advantage, you know, it's kind of like, you know, if you're an entrepreneur, a lot of these famous entrepreneurs, you know, in the tech community, they, you know, serial entrepreneurs that do project after project. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them will create, you know, a company, you know, some kind of web software or something, and there'll be a bunch of hype behind it. So they have that added pressure of delivering, you know, mm-hmm. because their name's already out there. It's like you said, when your name's not already out there, you can screw up and you can learn from your mistakes. And there's going to be mistakes and screw ups, and you just got to keep on at it. And I think eventually most, you know, it's a matter of how many times you're going to keep trying, because there's going to be failures.
Right. But not that I want to highlight failures and be like, Ryan, let's talk about failures. But I think every entrepreneur has to deal with that. I mean, because we all measure failures in a different way. I mean, whether it's putting together a product that didn't quite take off as much as we wanted, but it still took off, or, you know, the fact that starting your own business changes your relationships and the way you live your life. Failure is even what, I don't know if you've read Seth Godin, but he talks about the dip, just where, you know, you're working so hard and you're just not seeing the payoffs. And some people see the fact that, you know, delayed gratification as a form of failure, even though it's, you know, really not. I mean, Do you have any advice for people that are working on their projects, trying to get their business off the ground, and they might be, you know, and they're dealing with failure of any kind. Do you have any advice for that?
A lot. I feel. the biggest piece of advice that I have is especially with, you know, if you're a single founder, or if you're, you know, if you don't have a team behind you. I'm lucky enough that I do, but if you don't, I don't think enough people talk about the emotional drain that being an entrepreneur can put on you and starting your own thing. There's so many emotions that you're going to go through, and a lot of those are going to be negative emotions. And I think the reason why it can be so tolling is because when you're creating something, when you have this vision and you're working on it, you're trying to get it out there, it's part of you, you know, you created it. It's your creation. So you're intimately connected with it. And, it's like every little poke, you know, has an impact on you. Same with successes, you know, everything that happens is going to have an impact on you. And if you get too emotionally attached to your project, you're just going to go through hell. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to step away, and you have to kind of look at the big picture. And I know that kind of sounds cliche, but it's true, because, you know, like I said, you're working on something for hours and hours, day after day, week after week. And, you know, like you're saying, if you do a tweet and, you know, you get crickets back or something, it's going to hurt. And yeah. It's something so silly. It's like, it doesn't, come on, it's one tweet. It's no big deal, but it's going to have this negative impact on you. And things like that are going to happen time after time after time. Mm-hmm. And eventually it's going to get to the point to where you consider giving up. And it, you know, that you can't do that. And the only way not to do that is to just step away and try to detach your emotions a little bit from your project. Try to look at it from someone else's point of view. You know, when you're working on your own project, it's really hard to see it from someone's point of view who's never seen it before. You know, you have to realize that while you intimately care about your project and you think it's the greatest thing in the world, everyone on Twitter doesn't have this same investment into your project as you do. Mm-hmm. They don't have the same appreciation for it. And that's where you have to get into marketing. You have to make them as excited as you are about it. And that's the really difficult part. And that's what takes a special touch, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of those things that you kind of have to be your own cheerleader with it. Yeah. And if you're ever finding that you get overwhelmed, that's the one thing I've learned is that, you know, you may not be able to afford to take a vacation, because the whole point of this podcast is for broke entrepreneurs who are just really trying to get a business off the ground, even if they're broke. So even if it just means like stepping away, like going to go take a walk or taking the weekend off, it seems so hard for most like driven business people to be like, today I just can't produce meaningful content. I have to shut the laptop and walk away.
One thing I would suggest is in addition to, you know, doing stuff like that, I would suggest bringing other people in, bringing your friends in, or, you know, just getting other people's take on what you're doing. And start talking to them about it, and, you know, really get their insight, because then you can start to understand other people's point of view, and you can start to integrate that into your project, and eventually that's going to make your product better, whatever it may be. And when you talk to people directly, you know, it's not such an emotional thing. Because you're interacting with them instead of just, you know, not getting the results that you thought you were going to get, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe you thought you were going to get 1,000 newsletter signups and you only got 100 and you don't really know why. And you're sitting there by yourself trying to figure out, well, why didn't I get, you know, 1,000 signups? I did this. I did this blog told me to do this. And then you're trying to rack your brain when really you could just get 10 people in front of it and say, why or why wouldn't you sign up for this, you know. And it creates a dialogue that'll ultimately improve your product, and it'll kind of take the weight off your shoulders.
Oh, totally. I think that goes back to the whole point of emotionally detaching yourself from your project and your business. Because I think when you kind of put yourself in this shell where you are afraid of direct criticism. And asking your friends, like crowdsourcing with your friends, family, and colleagues, and being like, hey, well, what do you think about this? Because sometimes, you know, like we discussed earlier, it seems like you get too attached and it's like a reflection of you. It's like, no, I didn't, you know, I failed. It wasn't that this post sucked or this ebook, you know, just didn't quite hit the mark. It's like, I failed as a human being. Yeah, like God is going to strike me down. And so, you know, and one thing I would add to that is being careful who you talk to. Because sometimes I don't know if you've had this experience, like when you, I'm sure you have though, when you talk to certain people about, you know, Budgetable and you're like, hey, I have this idea, I've been working on it. Have you ever had that kind of weird feedback where they completely, they go against your intuition and kind of suggest the opposite of what you're about or what you've been doing? Have you ever had that experience?
Yeah, a lot. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You got to be careful who you talk to, because some people, I think that some people, and this can be especially true with your close friends, you got to be careful about that, because a lot of close friends are really, really great friends. You know, you get along great, but there's always this competitive aspect to the friendship, which is just kind of a little piece of baggage that might, that might be attached to the relationship. But if you start, you know, showing them all these things you're creating and everything like that, then you might get some negative feedback, you know, like, oh, that's a stupid idea. And really, it's not because it's a stupid idea. It's because the dynamics of your relationship is built in such a way that they're just kind of disappointed in themselves. This is, you know, this is just kind of what I think, but they're kind of disappointed in themselves that they're not doing the same thing you're doing. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of a negative reaction, you know, that it's really nothing about you or nothing about your project. It's really their issues. So, and that's one thing that I would recommend that people, entrepreneurs kind of try to stay away from is flooding their close friends and relatives with too much stuff about their project, because, you know, those are relationships that have probably been established over years and years, and really it's not the product that's gonna give you the feedback. It's the dynamics of that particular relationship that's really gonna come back at you. So you never know. You know, you might have a relationship with one of your friends, and they're always going to give you positive feedback just because they're great friends, you know. I really think you need to try to find people that really don't have a huge investment in your personal relationship. Mm-hmm. So you can get some honest feedback, and then if they criticize you, it doesn't affect your relationship. You just say, okay, well, you know, I guess I'll have to ask some more people and see if they agree, you know.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. And so another question I have for you is, has there been a biggest lesson that you have been able to take away from starting your own business? Like an overarching, you know, aha moment, or I had no idea about this until I started my own business. Was there anything that really stands out from you for you?
Yeah. I would say, you know, throughout this process, it's, you know, be humble is what I would say. There's a lot of smart people out there, and there's a lot of smart people, you know, entrepreneurs, you know, you gotta be smart to create stuff that doesn't exist, right? That's what it's about. There's going to be a lot of competition. And if you go into the situation thinking that you're smarter than these other people, or you have more drive than other people, or you know, you want it more than other people, you're going to get let down. And I'm not trying to discourage people for having those ambitions. It's good that you have to have the ambitions, obviously, but it's, it kind of goes back to the whole emotional thing. You know, if you go in there with the attitude of, you know, I'm going to learn, I'm going to figure this out, instead of going in there with the attitude of, I know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to blow these people out of the water. Then you're probably going to get let down, because, like I said, there's a lot of really smart people in this world, and it's good because a lot of really smart people love teaching, and that's what it's about. You know, you fail, you learn, and you eventually get it right. And when you do, it's going to be worth it, you know?
Totally. That is awesome. And so, as we wrap up this interview, do you have, could you give us some more information about where we can find more, like where to go about Budgetable and where people can find you?
Sure. So, if you want to sign up for the beta, which we're going to be sending out invites really soon, just go to budgetable.com. It's just like budgetable.com. We're on Twitter. So, Budgetable on Twitter. I'm usually on there. I have it on my screen all day. I'm wasting time. So
you totally are. I know. I tweet you all the time for random things.
Yeah. So yeah, you can send me a message on there. We're on Facebook, and we're everywhere.
That's awesome. All right. And so do you have any big goals for the next year? I hear you're going on vacation, which is awesome.
Yeah. Going to Grand Caymans in a few days. So
yeah, you better tweet some pictures about that. I'm sure people, especially in this horrible winter, we want to see pretty pictures of your vacation. So you better let us in on whatever, you know, tropical drinks you're drinking.
I will.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Ryan. It was wonderful having you on the podcast. And for anyone else that wants to check it out, go to budgetable.com. And thanks again, Ryan. You have an awesome vacay.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. So that wraps it up for episode 4 of the Frugalpreneur podcast. I want to thank Ryan of Budgetable.com again for coming on the show. And until I see you guys next time, have fun and venture on, kick tush, take names, and make some money. Bye.